following is a KTCK Sports Podcast presentation.
And welcome, everybody, to this new Dallas Stars podcast. Alongside Bruce Levine, I'm Owen Newkirk. Bruce, the season is upon us, and here we go. 2021-2022 Dallas Stars hockey with 32 NHL teams back to normal, sort of. There's a lot to go through this season. They have an Olympic break, which condenses the schedule. It's not as condensed as the Dallas Stars went through last year, but they have a new team in the Seattle Kraken. They have a new member of the division that they're returning to. No longer are they playing in this modified divisions with the, you know, the COVID restrictions and teams playing only in their divisions in Canada. As Stars are not in the East anymore. They're back in the Central. The Arizona Coyotes are now in the Central. And we have a lot of talking points to go through just on what I just said, let alone the actual roster. But I think it should be fun because we're back in the studio. We're back in the stadium. The fans are back at the AAC in full, and it should feel at least somewhat like normal, don't you think?
Okay, that just killed, what, 29 minutes of the 30-minute podcast?
Yeah, I did my best.
Okay. It's sort of back to normal, but it doesn't feel back to normal because you do have a bit of this, for lack of a better term, I call it a hangover from last year that just permeates through the air if you think about it. So I'm going to try not to think about it, but we saw how quickly a COVID outbreak in the locker room can derail an entire season and how it can change the complexion of a team. Hopefully with everyone vaccinated and things with the strict protocol, that will not be a case. But you look at what the Dallas Stars went through last year between the getting COVID, you know, of course, Anton Hudobin getting a massive case of COVID in the offseason, and I really think that affected him in the net during the regular season. Then you have the COVID outbreak before the season starts. Then you have the winterpocalypse storm. And then you look at a team that played, I defy anyone to find a worse schedule in the history of the NHL for any team, any place, any time. You're talking, there was the year that the Flyers building collapsed and they finished the season on the road, but still, you're not playing four games in six nights for 11 straight weeks and physically getting worn down and not being able to practice. So for the Dallas Stars, it is back to normal. I'm cautiously optimistic. We're not going to have another centuries worth of bad weather as we had last year, at least I hope not. And I think the Stars are poised, if everything goes properly and we don't have any kind of major malfunction, I think the Stars are poised for a pretty good season this year.
So we're going to go through the roster here because this is as we get ready for opening night. We're recording this 2 days before the first game for the Stars, which is on Thursday, the 14th of October at Madison Square Garden. And Bruce, there's a couple of different things. There's players that they've added, and then there's players that have returned to health. And both are going to play integral parts in the season. And I think we start with the players that they get healthy, because Tyler Seguin did not play very many games last year due to hip surgery and recovery. Alexander Radulov missed a bunch of the season. He was an absolute impact player when he was healthy, but didn't keep that, and that was part of the reason why they didn't make the playoffs by a very slim margin. Then you have Roope Hintz, who played through an injury. When he was in, he was really good, but he wasn't in on an every game basis. Roddick Foxa played the whole season essentially, but had a wrist injury and was not nearly, as if you hear what he said, up to what he expected, had a hard time even shooting the puck. So we think that those four forwards, all being healthy, are really going to make a major impact with the team by just being fit to start the season.
Well, you look at Radulov last year, 11 games, 12 points. And then he goes, he gets hurt, he's done for the year. He came back a little bit, just couldn't manage to get things done. And then you look at Tyler Seguin, 3 games played, 2 goals. Now, the Dallas Stars last season, Owen, went, and this is just ridiculous, 23-19 and 14 losses in shootouts or overtime. Can you please make an argument that I will believe that a healthy Tyler Seguin or Alexander Radulov wouldn't have found a way to win 2 or 3 games in shootouts and overtimes? Then you're talking about the Dallas Stars being a playoff team. That's how, you know, they're just impact players. How many times have you seen Alexander Radulov win a game? And, you know, you look about the first shootout Dallas won after the, you know, they won They won in overtime against Detroit the first four games of the season, then went about 2 months without winning. When did they win again? When Radulov came back in the lineup, about 2 months later in Columbus. So you're looking at guys who really are impact players. So you don't have to trade. You don't have to bring people in, because the Dallas Stars feel like in Radulov and Sagan, they have added two players to their top six who are world-class athletes. And you know what? They're right. Now, you look at Radek Foxa last year. Foxa last year was a very uncharacteristic minus player. He's not supposed to be a minus player. He was minus 15 last year. How much of that was injury? How much of that was fatigue? How much of that was bad goaltending? You know, because the Stars, Anton Hudobin never looked like he got to be the Dobby of old last year. So you talk about adding these players. I agree. This is a major upgrade. But you know what, Owen? The player I'm looking at, when the Stars lost Alexander Radulov, they lost two players, Alexander Radulov and Denis Gurianov.
Yep.
I don't know what happened, why Gurianov went south when Radulov went after the lineup, but Gurianov had a very tough season last year. Even though he finished with 30 points, you felt like he left a lot on the table. He left a lot. He could have been closer to 50 points last year. Didn't finish, didn't have confidence, didn't make good decisions, was benched 3-on-3 in overtime because he made some very bad plays that cost the Dallas Stars actual games. Can Denis Gurianov get back to where he was in the bubble? If you get Denis Gurianov back to where he was in the bubble, now you've added three top-line elite offensive players, and the Stars can have a 1-9, three top lines capable of scoring anytime they hit the ice. That is something that, you know, your top six is going to score this year. And there'll be some injuries and who you need to plug in. If Denis Gurianov shows back up, now you're looking at a top nine that can be an offensive threat any time out.
To me, Gurianov is the biggest question mark going into this season. Yeah, we'll talk about goaltending in a minute. But to me, Bruce, after what he did in the bubble, where he was so dynamic offensively, he had such a great impact one-timer on the power play, and his rookie season really made everybody think that he's finally figured it out at the NHL level after a few call-up issues and not really getting his feet on it, you know, under him in the proper way in his early opportunities getting called up from the AHL. It just wasn't working. He finally figured it out, and everybody was really excited. Then last year, as you said, it was inconsistent. Could it have been the fact that Radulov was out of the lineup? Maybe. That does have an impact. But he has to figure it out for himself as well. And you heard Rick Bowness, I know you did because we were both there, talk several times during training camp this year about Gurianov needing to be consistent, which is something he hasn't done, because he'll have one game or even one period where he'll look like a huge impact winger who can change games for the better. And then in the same game or otherwise, look like he's completely non-existent and, you know, drop to your fourth line because the coach is frustrated he's not getting anything out of him. The thing that really stood out to me of what Rick Bowness said earlier in training camp was he wants Denis Gurianov to attack with the talents and physical attributes that he has. He's big, he's strong, and he has the speed that can blow by guys on the outside. Well, in preseason this year at the AAC, one of those examples, Gurianov gets the puck in the neutral zone. He has a chance to attack a defender one-on-one and go to the outside and try to drive the net. And he tries to toe drag and dangle back to the middle, gets the puck stripped, and the play dissolves and they go the other way. Bones wants him going wide every single time because it does a lot to put the opponent's defense under duress. And it may not work every time, Bruce, but every time it does work, it's going to create chaos and scoring chances.
And also, it creates a stretch. When Denis Gurianov gets going speed-wise, just like Roope Hintz, when they get going, the defense has to be concerned about where they are at all points in time. You've seen Roope Hintz get the puck and just the way he can go from 0 to 60. And when he gets going full speed with the puck, he's almost unstoppable. You can't get between him and the net without him getting a shot off or a quality chance. Gurianov has that ability, but he's got to be able, you know, just the way Hintz figured out that every time I get the puck with speed, I know what I'm doing, I know where I'm going. Gurianov has got to get that confidence and that feel that I have the puck, I have speed, here's where I am on the ice, this is where I need to go. This is what I need to do, and if they stop me, they stop me, but this is my strength. Let's see if they can stop my strength. You go back to 2019 where he got sent down to the AHL, didn't pout, got called back up. He had 20 goals in the last 60 games of the season for him at the NHL level. He goes to the bubble, has 17 points in 27 games against the top teams in the NHL. That guy returns, the Dallas Stars are loaded. And then if you have injuries, you can look at and say, okay, Gurianov can step up and be top six.
Yep.
Gurianov, we don't lose a whole lot. Or even better yet, you look at if people get healthy, and you know, right now it looks like Robertson's not going to play opening night. So if people get healthy, you can have Jamie Benn playing center with Gurianov on the wing. You can have Sagan playing with Radulov. You have Pavelski playing with Hintz and Robertson, and now you plug in a winger on those with the Sagan-Radulov combination, the Ben-Gurionov, and you've got a top nine
yep.
that no team can just say, we're going to focus on one line. You have to play all the way through and depth it all the way through. If Gurionov doesn't show up, Stars got issues, and not just because they only have a top six instead of a top nine, but what do you do with somebody that's that inconsistent? I hope that Gurianov shows up, but the thing, the scary part if you're the Dallas Stars is, if Gurianov shows up, all's great, it's unicorns and cotton candy and Skittles rainbows, everything's fantastic. If Gurianov doesn't show up, your fear is you give up on this kid, and he goes somewhere and becomes the superstar you know he can be, but if you don't give up on him, you're looking at the same roller coaster of mediocrity. Gurianov this year has got to be the guy that steps up and be what we saw 2 years ago.
I don't want to spend our whole podcast talking about forwards, but a couple more points on the forwards before we go to defense, and then we'll hit the goaltenders. Bruce, the additions of Michael Roffel, of course, bringing Blake Como back on a one-year deal, and adding Luke Glendening, the two offseason free agent moves, actually three if you count Como, are interesting to me because it does sort of force some of the young guys that were playing down to the AHL, Rhett Gardner's, Nick Camanos, Ty Dellandrea's, but also I think there's a sneaky ads here, especially Michael Roffel in a third line role. He's very likable. I've heard from Philadelphia that he is exceptionally well liked in the locker room. That's always a good thing. He's 32, the Austrian forward. He scored a great goal in preseason that reminded me that's a shooter's goal, not just a, hey, he worked hard, he got to the right position, he put it in. He kind of, against the run of play, got the puck against St. Louis and ripped one home, and you go, ooh, that's a nice add for your bottom six. And then Luke Glendening, second best faceoff guy last year in the league. Only Patrice Bergeron had better numbers than Luke Glendening, but he also is a character guy. Jim Neal knows him from back when Neal was still with the Detroit Red Wings. I remember watching Glendening when he was playing in the AHL with Grand Rapids. He's another veteran guy. He's 32, signed a two-year deal at $1.5 million a year. I think he's another glue guy. And, you know, Bruce, you were around for the 99 Cup run. Glue guys are very important in playoff runs, not just the Modanos, the Zubovs, etc.
I'll work backwards from what you were talking about. Yeah, the grumpy old men line. Dallas Stars don't win a Stanley Cup without the grumpy old men. Guy Carboneau. I'm not saying that Glendening's Guy Carboneau, but
or that he's grumpy.
He might be.
I think he's nice.
I think Guy was nice off the ice too. But if you look at a guy that can come in at the end of games and win faceoffs, win six. You talk about, think about it. The end of the game last year, and Rick Bonus talked about this, that the Dallas Stars' problem was they were winning faceoffs and weren't able to clear the puck. Well, if you clear the puck and you can win faceoffs, you're going to win a lot of hockey games, because at the end of the game, when the other team has their goalie pulled, winning faceoffs is 50% or more of just winning the game. I win the faceoff, I get the puck, I flipper it out to center ice, they've got to regroup the entire way. So Glendening provides a bit of that glue. For me, however, Michael Roffel, and it's Roffel, not Raffle, it's Roffel, winds with waffle.
Rhymes with waffle, folks.
If he may be the sneaky signing of the offseason.
I agree, completely.
Because I was like, when they signed Michael Roffel, I'm like, okay, this guy's hasn't scored double digits in goals in a number of years and has been in and out of the lineup.
It didn't move the needle for me much on free agent day.
But then you show up at training camp and he's the first day, he's on a line with Gurianov and Ben. And you're seeing his speed and you're seeing his size and you're seeing the things he can do on the ice. All of a sudden you go, wow, this guy's a nice fit. This is a guy that can make things happen without the puck. You saw the goal you talked about. That was a steal in the offensive zone. The defenseman thought, well, Roffel's just going out of the zone, I'll make an easy cross-ice pass. Roffel stepped up. And then Waffle
the test
the goalie.
You should start calling him Waffle.
Waffle.
I love it.
Waffle stepped up and Roffle the home. No, Roffle stepped up and Waffle the puck past the goalie. So those are kind of things that you look at as a depth signing. And You could say all you want about the youngsters, and I think someday they will all be Dallas Stars, but if they could fit those roles, they would be in Dallas fitting those roles.
And they have to, and they had a chance, right? Training camp and preseason, there were opportunities for players to outplay veterans and earn jobs and force Jim Neal to trade or release players. It's hard to do. It's not like the NFL where you just cut guys when you feel like it. They're guaranteed contracts. But they would have made moves if somebody stepped up and overwhelmingly forced the coaches and the front office's hands. And that just didn't happen, did it?
No, it did not happen. And that's part of the thing where at the NHL level, and they said this going to training camp, you're going to earn your spot on this team. If Raffel came and fell on his face, you know, and we'll use a name that we haven't talked about, but I'm sure we will, Jacob Peterson. He showed up at Traverse City. He followed what I like to call the Matthias Janmark. The Matthias Janmark.
It's a very
model,
good comp.
Which is the model.
It was 2015-16 when Janmark showed up.
Showed up as a rookie. No one knew what to do. He was the throw-in in the Eric Cole deal. Showed up. Really had a good Traverse City, went to training camp, kept the momentum going, made the team, has been in the NHL ever since. Jacob Peterson, same thing. No one knew what to expect from him. Shows up, looks really good at Traverse City, keeps the momentum going, and except for some paperwork,
he's going to be in the NHL.
In the NHL by the end of this week.
Maybe by the end of this podcast.
He'll be in the NHL. So you're looking at young players had the opportunity, but they didn't get it done. Not meaning that Delandria and Camano and guys like Rhett Gardner aren't going to be here and aren't going to be here in the future. But for right now, the guys they brought in make it. And people keep, you've got to remember, what do the Dallas Stars keep preaching? We are a puck control team. We want the puck. Well, what's the best way to control the puck? You win the faceoff, you have the puck. This isn't football where, you know, you flip a coin and you get it or you don't. If you win the faceoff, you win it. Well, now with Sagan, Fox, or Glenn Denning, and even Jamie Benn, who's very good on his strong side, you're looking at guys who win more than 50% of their faceoffs. If you're a puck possession team, voila, you've got the puck. Power play, you start with the puck. Penalty kill, you get the puck. How many times last year did Dallas lose the faceoff on the power play and then would start 200 feet away?
It felt like it was almost an automatic.
And we would be screaming because the power play would be 30 seconds in,
yep,
and they still hadn't crossed the blue line.
And set up because they lost the faceoff.
Well, now Dallas becomes the team that wins the faceoff, clears the puck, and gets to set the strategy for the penalty kill. Winning that faceoff's everything, and Glenn Denning will be a master at it.
Last thought, because we do have to move on from the forwards, is just, we talk a lot about the additions, guys getting healthy, free agents coming in. The one thing, Bruce, that isn't changing, now, of course, Hintz is recovering and healthy now, and I think that's going to be a great thing, but the one thing, and you mentioned Jason Robertson is carrying an upper body injury, may not play in the season opener, but one of the things that carried over from last year that I think is going to be great is that Pavelski, Hintz, and Robertson line. And I also think that unlike Gurianov, Jason Robertson is not going to suffer from a sophomore slump.
No, and Jason Robertson has the ability to score goals, and he has the innate ability to score goals. You know, he did it in the OHL. The reason he fell in the NHL draft the second round was people said he can't skate at the NHL level. It was nothing about hands, hockey sense, the ability to score. And you and I have seen this being in the minors. There are guys who can just score goals at will in the AHL or the ECHL, but they don't have that step or that quickness to get the job done at the NHL level.
Yep.
People looked at Jason Robertson and said, this guy's going to be a 50-goal scorer in the AHL, but he doesn't skate well enough to be in the
NHL.
Can't
create his own space and score goals in the NHL.
Right. Well, he worked on his skating.
Yep.
And he worked on his skating to the point where now he's a decent NHL skater. Not the greatest, but he's decent enough to where the other abilities, the goal scoring, the sense of where to be with the puck and how to create space so that the puck can get to you, he has taken with him. Jason Robertson is going to be an elite goal scorer for this Dallas Stars team when he comes back in the lineup, and you look for that Pavelski, Hintz, Robertson line to be great. You know, it's always 20-20 hindsight, but you can look back at any draft chart, any of the central scouting, why players are where they are, and some guys, you just going, boy, were they off on this guy. Jason Robertson, you look at the class of 2017 where the Stars got Haskinen, Ottinger, and Robertson. That is going to be one of the great all-time classes for the Dallas Stars. But you look at some of the comments with Jason Robertson, and the Dallas Stars said, no, we can't believe this guy fell to us. That's going to be the case with Robo.
Let's go to the defense now. Mostly returning, the big loss is Jamie Oleksiak, the big rig who really finally figured it out at the NHL level, came into his own and became a top four defenseman playing alongside Miro Haskinen. Was a free agent. He had expressed interest in re-signing with the Stars, but then had a chance to talk during the interview window with the Seattle Kraken. Kraken obviously came to terms with him and ended up picking him in the expansion draft, partly because of the fact that he was really the obvious option. Jason Dickinson had already been traded by the Stars to Vancouver, so there weren't a lot of other choices unless they wanted to go after Anton Khudobin, and they decided Oleksiak was their guy. So, Bruce, that leaves a big hole because one of your top four defensemen is no longer in the organization, and the Stars go out in free agency, and they give a four-year contract, $3.65 million annually, to Ryan Suter, who's 36 years old. Now, a lot of times, you would really cringe at giving a guy in his mid-30s a extended contract, thinking that his best years are behind him. But when Suter signed, he thinks he can be like a Tom Brady type in the sense of longevity. He feels he could play until he's 45, and I'm not so sure he's wrong.
I know you mentioned Tom Brady because you just can't get away from New England. I know you can't.
Well, and he's playing in his mid-40s in the NFL.
Right, but I like to use the comparison of another great American defenseman.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
One, Chris Chelios.
That's fair.
And you look at Chris Chelios played in the NHL till I believe he was 49 years old, and he was a workout freak. And
he also played in the UHL during the lockout year of 04-05.
But he was a guy that was a workout freak and was a guy that really every single day of his life was committed to fitness and keeping his body at peak shape. Ryan Suter, they say, is of that mold and of that ilk. Now, last year, you know, he didn't lead the Minnesota Wild in time on ice, but they had four defensemen that all played right around 21 to 23 minutes. They didn't have anyone that led, but they had a good amount being played. Suter was in that top two for Minnesota. He can play, if he has to, 25 to 27 minutes a night. You don't want him to have to do that. The thing with Ryan Suter is it gives the Dallas Stars, and he talked about the preference with this, they wanted a righty-lefty. He wanted to play with a right-handed defenseman. So you have Klingberg and Suter. Now, how fast can they get the chemistry going after the first playoff game at the AAC? Rick Bonus ripped them a little bit, saying they made some bad decisions.
Preseason game.
Yeah, preseason game. They made some decisions that he would like back, but they will grow together and get better. If Ryan Suter can play till he's 40, fantastic. But he was not brought in for 4 years from now. Ryan Suter was brought in for here and now.
Yep.
Here is the best available replacement we have for Jamie Oleksiak. It's a 36-year-old defenseman from Wisconsin. We are going to get him. If he can play at the level Oleksiak played, now don't expect the physicality or the one man stopping the cycle with a body check or dropping the gloves if he has to. That is not Ryan Suter's role. That is not his demeanor. That's not how he plays the game. But he's smart. He really gets caught out of position, and he can penalty kill, and he can play 27 to 30 minutes if absolutely necessary. Look for Ryan Suter to be a very adequate, if not, I would say, improvement. And that's going a long way because I love Jamie Oleksiak's game. But Ryan Suter's here for a reason, to make the defense better and make it better right now.
Well, the top four is loaded. Miro Heiskanen on his new contract, $8.45 million annually for a long time. Signed the 8-year deal. Esa Lindell. John Klingberg is on the last year of his very team-friendly now contract. He signed $30 million for 7 years a long time ago. And now his 4.25 hit is a real bargain on the salary cap. But he is an unrestricted free agent after this year. He also wants to make the Swedish Olympic team. Bruce, this is a huge year for John Klingberg.
It is a huge year for John Klingberg, and I'm going to go on a limb here. I don't see a reason for him, if he's playing well, to sign with the Dallas Stars right now. I know the Stars want to. I know it's a top priority for them. But when you see Seth Jones getting a $9 million deal, and you see other defensemen who are similar to John Klingberg getting $7 or $8 million a year, I can see John Klingberg saying, you know what, I'm going to put all the chips to the table, I'm going to play my best hockey, I'm going to try to make the Olympic team, and then I'll see what my value is. I can't blame him for doing that at all. John Klingberg, when he is good, is as good an offensive defenseman as there is in the NHL. His ability to wire pucks from the blue line to the front of the net on the power play, he and Zach Werenski, in my opinion, the two best in the NHL at getting pucks to where all of a sudden now guys like Pavelski and Robertson and Ben can go to the net and battle for the rebounds and score goals. There is nobody better than John Klingberg at doing that. So if John Klingberg, and he knows this is a contract year, plays to his level of ability, he's going to be fine. And you know, John Klingberg is one of those guys where high risk, high reward. Yeah, and fans get mad. Oh, he turns the puck over. Well, in order to turn the puck over, you've got to have the puck on your stick a lot. And there's a lot of NHL teams that, being that he's a right-handed offensive defenseman who can play 20 to 25 minutes a night and quarterback your power play, would love to have a John Klingberg. So don't look at the negative stats. Yeah, there's going to be a couple of mistakes here and there because he has the puck so much. But when you look at what John Klingberg brings to the mix, he might be able to cash in big after a season like this. I don't know what kind of financial gymnastics Jim Neal can do to sign him earlier this year, but I'd sure like to see him do it.
Well, let's take a look at the bottom pairing, because Andre Sekera and Joel Hanley return. They looked very good in preseason together. They are not going anywhere. They also added some depth in Andreas Borgman and Alexander Petrovic. Those guys start in the AHL, but I have no qualms about needing them with an injury. If you need to call them up, they can do a decent job. However, Bruce, the last part of the defense to talk on at the moment is the extra addition to the Finnish Mafia that the Stars did in free agency, bringing over massive right-handed defenseman Jani Hakanpää, who played last year for the Carolina Hurricanes. He's got size, he's got reach, he's got physicality. I think he's kind of the, I mean, obviously, like for like, who he's the physical replacement for the big rig, because Oleksiak was that hulking large defenseman. The difference is he's right-handed and he's not being asked, at least to start the year, to play in a top four role.
It's interesting how many teams wanted Hakanpää. When you think about the offseason and who was out there, all of a sudden Hakanpää's name really started to creep up, not just with the Dallas Stars, but with several other teams. I mean, he did play with Carolina and was a nice part of their defense. Carolina will tell you that their division in the postseason was a bit tougher than everyone else's, and since the Stars played in that division, I don't think I'd argue that point a whole lot. But Hakanpää's stock shot up greatly, and for the Stars to get him was a very nice touch. He's one of those guys that, again, sort of under the radar, but I'm not sure to people around the NHL that this was an under-the-radar signing. It was a very economical signing, and you look at what he can bring physically, right-handed, left-handed, whether you have Sekera or Hanley out there. Of course, there's going to be injuries. I also like Petrovic. I think Petrovic had an outstanding preseason, and if somebody gets hurt, calling him up is not going to be a drop in any way, shape, or form.
I think he's a great third pairing guy to add to
exactly.
your team for depth.
I like what he's brought to the mix as well. So again, Jim Neal went off this offseason and he had his list of what he wanted, and he just went and bought everything. There was no comparison shopping. There was no, I'm going to sit back and wait and hope that I can grow this in my vegetable garden. He went out and got everything he wanted for this team. And I don't think depth-wise, the Stars have ever been deeper in this will be my 12th year. The 12 years I've seen with this team, they have never been deeper.
Okay, so that's the defense. Now the goaltending. Bruce, we thought for sure that Ben Bishop was going to feature in this training camp and preseason more than he has, because he was getting closer, like Sagan last year at the end of the season, just didn't quite have enough time to get into a preseason game, or excuse me, an AHL game with the Texas Stars to see if he could prove that his body could hold up to the rigors of playing in a game and then get back to the NHL. So we all thought, okay, Bishop is going to be back. We're going to see him in camp. Then in free agency, the Stars went out and signed Braden Holtby to a one-year, $2 million contract after he was bought out by the Vancouver Canucks, buying out the second year of the two-year deal he signed in free agency the year prior. So that at first made everybody scratch their heads and go, well, wait a minute, you have Bishop, you have Hudobin, you have Ottinger. Why do you need Braden Holtby? But after stepping back a little bit, and you and I talked about this over the summer when we did our shows either on the fill-in basis or at the draft, and here we are now going, okay, it's about flexibility. And now we've had a chance to watch, what is this flexibility? Well, Ben Bishop has practiced pretty much every day. We've watched him. He's looked pretty energetic, but he did not play in a preseason game, which was something that at the beginning of camp, he said he was looking to do. So now they can't get him to test it in a game that doesn't count at the NHL level because preseason's over. He'll have to go down to the AHL to do that, but it's going to be a while because they just put him on LTIR. So because of those limitations, Bruce, it's going to be a while till Ben Bishop is in the fold, if he is at all in the fold this year. He said, early in training camp, he fully intends to play in the NHL for the Dallas Stars this year. It looks like it's going to be the Holtby and Hudobin show with Ottinger, who didn't do anything wrong, but didn't supplant either of those two guys. being in the AHL with the Texas Stars. And look, it's not the long-term thing. For those of you who are huge fans of Ottinger, don't be dismayed that he got, if you feel like he's been demoted or relegated to the minor leagues. This is just a strategic thing. Ottinger's not going to have his confidence dented. He is a very, very strong, mentally strong individual, and which we saw last year being thrown to the wolves at times in his rookie year in the NHL. Ottinger's going to be fine. He still has a very, very bright future. And Bruce, Dallas has still a lot of options because of Holtby, because of Hudobin, maybe Bishop. If either one of those players gets hurt, they bring up Ottinger and they are not missing a beat.
Well, here's the thing. The upside says the Dallas Stars are loaded at goaltender. Everything's great. And this is going to be, with the team structure, it's going to be a really good year.
Yep.
However, if you want to be Debbie Downer here, womp womp. Each of the Dallas Stars goaltenders has questions. There are some big question marks. Of course, Ben Bishop's knee. I mean, it's been more than a year since he played his last game. Is he ever coming back?
Did you hear the absolutely most glaring comment that he made during that interview where he said, they was talking about his, he had two procedures done on his knee,
right,
with his meniscus. And he said, this is it.
This is as good as it gets.
This is the kind of the last surgical procedure that he can do, this medical treatment. If it doesn't get any better and he can't play, there's no other options he can take. So if it's either going to work,
right,
or he's never playing in the NHL again.
And being that it's been more than a year since he's played in the NHL, and you just don't step up and go, well, I haven't been in the NHL for a year, I'm just going to put on the pads and go play against Kaprizov, right, or MacKinnon. You just don't do that. So I don't know how long it will be until Ben Bishop. There's the big question with Ben Bishop. Anton Hudobin's numbers dropped dramatically last year. How much of that was because of the COVID he had in the offseason? He had a very bad case of COVID, really affected his respiratory, affected his ability to work out, affected his ability to be ready for the season. Did he ever catch up? Was last year's Anton Hudobin performance because of illness, or is Anton Hudobin, did he hit his peak in the bubble and he's going in the other direction? Braden Holtby had career worst numbers in Vancouver. Let's face it, Vancouver is never going to be confused for the 2000 New Jersey Devils when it comes to defense.
Nope.
Now, is this on Braden Holtby? Well, apparently Vancouver felt that Braden Holtby was so poor in net, they could just buy him out and let him go because their options were better. Is Braden Holtby better than what his numbers were last year? And finally, Jake Ottinger, you know, he's a kid. Is he ready to step up? If you look at it, in my opinion, Jake Ottinger, being the youngest, probably has the fewest question marks around him. He goes to the AHL and plays well. If any of those, especially Hudobin or Holtby, don't play back to where the Stars expect them, you can bring up Ottinger and tell the rookie, it's your net, you go run with it.
Yep.
That is the saving grace of all this. Conversely, if things go well, if Hudobin goes back to Bubble Dobby and Holtby goes back to the guy that backstopped Washington the Stanley Cup.
And won a Vezina before, right, that.
You've got just an embarrassment of riches in the net in front of a team that plays great structure in front of them, and you're looking at, wow, this is a team that could do a lot of damage a lot of ways and go very far.
And if somebody's playing really well, yeah, or both of them are, and then Bishop comes back and shows that he can play, then you have a possible trade piece as well. Not saying I'm looking to get rid of Hudobin or Holtby, but that option does exist. You know, Hudobin has a $3.3 million cap hit this year and next year, Bruce, at 35. And if he's playing well, there are definitely teams in the NHL right now that goaltending situation could use help.
You know, the goaltending's like starting pitching in baseball. Don't tell me you can ever have too much.
Right.
Because you can never have too much of that. So I like what Dallas is. Now, of course, the question is it going to happen? Is it going to be where it needs to be?
Those are all going to be put together.
And we'll find out very quickly, because in the first month, Dallas plays, I believe, 8 of their first 14 on the road. They have 8 game, or is it 8 out of the 12?
I think it's 8 of their first 11.
8 out of 11 on the road. So you need your goaltending to be good if you're going to start off. And Dallas has talked so much about they want to get off to a better start this year. They have to come out of the gates and show that they're a quality team. Well, if your goaltending is good, that could happen. If it's not good, then you got concerns.
Lastly, because we have touched on everything roster-wise, let's talk about division really quickly, because they're back in the Central Division, and that means they get to see all of the familiar faces again, right? Again, we saw Chicago last year. We did not see the St. Louis Blues. We did not see the Winnipeg Jets. We didn't see the Colorado Avalanche in regular season play. Minnesota Wild, that was weird, right? It was a little strange. They played Nashville a ton, but now it's really back. Plus, you get the Arizona Coyotes, who Bruce may very well be the runt of the litter of the Central Division. But this is still, again, shaping up to be a massive first time with eight teams because of the addition to the Kraken. Arizona moves over to the Central. Now all four divisions in the NHL have eight. So we have a real balance here. But you have to finish in the top four. I don't like that. I wish that they would give division winners the top seeds in the West and then let the next six at large, because if you're the fifth best team in the Central and you're better in points than the fourth best team in the Pacific, you should make the playoffs. That's a different argument for another day. But Bruce, as you look at this, Arizona, Chicago, Colorado, Dallas, Minnesota, Nashville, St. Louis, and Winnipeg, looks like it's going to be a bit of a bloodbath. And the Stars don't even play their first Central Division game until November 2nd in Winnipeg. The whole first month is teams from the East and teams from the Pacific.
Okay, first and foremost, I do not consider Arizona a threat to anything in the Central Division this year. And in fact, I don't want to even think about this, but if Ben Bishop can't play, I can see him finishing his career in an Arizona Coyotes contract. You know, just get to that salary cap floor. But as you know, Arizona has a long history of being where injured players go to retire with their salary. You know, Chris Pronger finishes an Arizona Coyote. You know, or maybe it was a Phoenix Coyote back then. It's what they do. But I digress. The team that scares me, now, of course, Colorado is going to be good. Colorado is going to be what they are. If they get any kind of goaltending, watch out for them, because they have just so much talent stocked up. But the team that intrigues me the most in the Central, aside from Dallas, is Chicago. I look at the Blackhawks, a team that was borderline last year, had some really good moments when everyone thought they were in a really rebuilding mode. Well, now they've added Seth Jones, they've added Marc-Andre Fleury, and Jonathan Toews looks like he's ready to come back and play NHL hockey. Those are three big additions. Now, I know they traded away Duncan Keith, but Duncan Keith was really, you've traded a 30-something-year-old defenseman in Seth Jones. I mean, traded, but not literally, but in the lineup, you've substituted a 30-plus-year-old defenseman for a guy that was one of the top three players named to the U.S. Olympic team in Seth Jones. I don't buy that Seth Jones last year in Columbus was because he's losing it. I think Columbus was just a train wreck, and last year you could throw a lot of negatives out the window. Chicago intrigues me. Chicago scares me a bit. St. Louis, the Tarasenko thing, just where they're going, I'm not overly impressed or concerned. I think Minnesota will be okay. I think Winnipeg's going to be okay. But if you're looking at a team that can jump from nowhere to the middle of the pack, I also think Nashville is going to be okay. There's a lot of teams that I think will be middle of the pack okay-ish.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of easy games. The only one that I think is really going to scare people is Colorado. And the thing is that they got rid of their goaltender. They didn't want to lose Grubauer, but they don't have him anymore. They did bring in Darcy Kemper, who I think, if he's healthy, is excellent. Francois is hurt, their other goalie, so they're a little light in the goaltending department, and that could be their downfall, because Bruce, they have a scary lineup of skaters.
Oh yeah, McKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog. You look at their defense with Makar and Girard.
Yep. They added Jack Johnson to go with Eric Johnson.
I mean, the Matt Duchene trade is the gift that keeps on giving to Colorado. Yep. They're going to be very good.
Yep.
But again, Colorado is going to be judged by their postseason. And they felt the last 2 years that they had a major disappointment. They were up 2-0 on Vegas, and look like they were going to cruise by them. And then the car hit the wall and fell off. They Wile E. Coyote'd it. They kept running and then looked down and realized they were no longer on the cliff and just plummeted with a little yike sign to the end of the playoffs. Colorado will be judged by their postseason. But talent-wise, I don't think there's a team in the NHL right now that you just look talent-wise, nope, as far as a mix of veteran and youth that matches with Colorado. But again, you got to do it in the postseason. They haven't done it yet.
So that wraps it up for our podcast. As you look, the Stars have every fighter's chance of being a contender in the Central Division, but they have to go out and get it done. And Bruce, that's the ultimate message after going through the roster, looking at some of the teams in the division, is they have the pieces, if they can stay healthy and put it all together, to be a pretty good team. I don't think they're going to win the Central Division. I don't know if that actually matters, but I do think they can and probably will make the playoffs as long as they don't have too many speed bumps in the road.
It doesn't matter if you win the division. It's nice. It's nice to hang a banner. It's about winning in the playoffs, and Dallas Stars have to get back to the playoffs. Last year was such a Murphy's Law, a conglomeration of badness that I don't think will ever happen again. You look at the schedule. I mean, four games and six nights for 11 straight weeks. That cannot possibly happen. COVID hitting 17 players. The winter storm. It was just, you know, injuries to Sagan, Radulov, Bishop, Hintz playing on one leg. All of that cannot happen again this year. But I will say this. You look at the Stars' core. Radulov, contract up after this year. Klingberg, contract up after this year. Pavelski, contract up after this year. Como, contract up after this year. Jamie Benn, approaching the mid-30s. Sekera, also, you know, getting to that point where, you know, this team is built and built to win now. It's sort of the Stars' version of The Last Dance. No, Jim Nill's not going to turn Jerry Krause and fire everybody and try to rebuild from scratch and never get it done. They do have that core with Hintz and Robertson and Ottinger and Haskin ready to take the reins from this current group. But for this current group of leadership and the core of this team that's been the face of this franchise ever since Jim Nill took over, the Sagans, the Benns, Klingberg, that group, this is their year. This is the put up or shut up year. And for the Dallas Stars, making the playoffs just isn't good enough. Being in the first round and winning and then losing in the second round just isn't good enough. This is a team that has to go deep, if not win it all, for this to be a successful year. There is no building for tomorrow. There is no just wait until we get Ottinger and Harley and those guys and we'll complete the picture. The picture is there now for this group. And if I may steal a TV show from the 80s, it's all about the 30-somethings. If the 30-somethings get it done, there's going to be a lot of happy people around Dallas. If the 30-somethings break down, show their age, get injured, can't perform at the higher level, this team is going to have a radically different look come next year.
And of course, you can listen to all of the action throughout the year of Stars Hockey on its official home right here, Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310 The Ticket. Bruce and I have our pregame shows, intermissions, postgame show, Josh and Razor calling the games, and of course, many members of the broadcast and the team on The Ticket during different segments throughout the week. So we appreciate you listening to our podcast today and hope you listen throughout the year as the Stars are here on The Ticket. For Bruce, I'm Owen. So long, everyone.
You've been listening to a KTCK Sports Podcast presentation.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.